here in Oakland to attend the Global Gay Summit.
I present a group called Beijing Sisters, based in Beijing, China.
ILGA is the largest international federation of more than 400 organizations and individuals.
In Venezuela, we deal not only with sexual orientation, discrimination related to gender issues.
To be gay is a criminal offense in Sri Lanka, India, Pakistan, Nepal, and it certainly need to recognize that we are not criminals in our own land, that we are not asking for any special rights, but a right to survive.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Gays may be okay for crisis time U.S. military service, but after that, don't ask. A U.N. committee hears a gay Australian's quest for his partner's military pension, and Southern Hemisphere activists dialogue at ILGA's Global Gay Summit. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 22, 2001. U.S. Republican officials made three significant gay-friendly moves this week, at a time when some gay and lesbian groups have joined in calling for care to preserve civil rights in the face of anti-terrorist sentiment. As the U.S. mobilizes for a military response to terrorism, President George W. Bush and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld this week authorized a so-called stop-loss policy for the military, designed to keep as many service members as possible available for combat. That policy allows commanders more latitude to suspend discharge actions, including those for violations of the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell rules for gay and lesbian service members. Stop-loss policies were instituted during U.S. military actions in the Persian Gulf, Vietnam, Korea, and late in World War II, with discharges for homosexuality dropping sharply during those conflicts, only to rise abruptly when they ended. SLDN, the Service Members Legal Defense Network, has warned gays and lesbians in uniform that there has been no repeal or suspension of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that even the stop-loss policy is not yet actually in effect. The administration's move this week empowers the secretaries of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps to establish stop-loss policies, which they're expected to do within the next 2 weeks. Aaron Belkin, director of the Center for the Study of Sexual Minorities in the Military, said that stop-loss draws into question the military's argument that gay and lesbian service members compromise the morale, cohesiveness, and operational effectiveness of their units, since it is during periods of conflict that morale, cohesiveness, and operational effectiveness are most vital. Even military sociologist Charles Moskus, who played a key role in drafting the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, called stop-loss kind of hypocritical.
Bush administration nominee Michael Guest was sworn in to become only the second openly gay U.S. ambassador. He'll serve in Romania, which has yet to fully decriminalize homosexuality. That's been the subject of 8 years of strenuous debate between Romanian governments seeking to qualify for European Union membership and Romanian parliaments influenced by religious and nationalist concerns. But Guest is reportedly already in Romania, so apparently that government did not object to his appointment. Career diplomat Guest's selection represents something of an honor for Romania, as he's the highest-ranking U.S. Foreign Service official ever to serve in the Bucharest Embassy. His most recent post in the Foreign Service has been Acting Assistant Secretary for Legislative Affairs. Previously, he was deputy chief at the embassy in Prague, participated in arms control negotiations with the USSR, and served in embassies in Moscow, Paris, and Hong Kong. Although Guest's sexual orientation was known to the Bush administration and was widely known within the State Department, he did not choose to make it public until this week. It was not discussed during his confirmation hearings before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in July. The Senate confirmed his appointment by voice vote without debate. At Guest's swearing-in, Secretary of State Colin Powell publicly acknowledged Guest's partner of 6 years, Alex Navarez, who was on the podium for the occasion.
A committee of the Republican-controlled U.S. House this week agreed to drop its prohibition against Washington, D.C., implementing the domestic partners legislation the city enacted in 1992. Because the city cannot tax its sole industry, the federal government, it relies on congressional appropriations for the bulk of its budget. Until now, the House has made its funds for the city contingent on complete suspension of the Domestic Partners Ordinance. That measure would have established a partners registry open to all unmarried cohabitants, including non-residents, giving them hospital visitation privileges. City employees would have been able to purchase health insurance coverage for their registered partners entirely at their own expense. But thanks to openly gay Republican Congressmember Jim Colby of Arizona, the House Appropriations Committee voted to amend its appropriations bill. If the full House approves the amendment, Washington, D.C.'s Domestic Partners Ordinance can finally go into effect, although none of the federal funds can be used for this purpose. The city says it can implement the ordinance with its own funds. Both the full House and the Senate Appropriations Committee are expected to vote on funds for Washington in the coming week. Religious right groups are lobbying against the change.
An Australian gay man's quest to collect his deceased partner's military pension has been taken up by the United Nations Human Rights Committee. Edward Young's relationship lasted 38 years, ending only with the death of his war veteran partner 3 years ago. Yet Australia's Department of Veterans Affairs refused to recognize it. Young says he's pursuing the case not for money, but for the principle of equality and to honor his late partner's military service. The Australian Defense Force officially opened military service to gays and lesbians in 1992. Both Young and the Australian government have made written submissions to the UN Human Rights Committee, but a ruling is not expected for at least a year and a half.
A bill for legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples in the Czech Republic won approval from the nation's cabinet this week and advanced to the parliament. No former communist bloc country has yet extended legal status to same-gender couples. The government's proposed registered partnerships would carry many of the legal rights of marriage with equal recognition in areas including inheritance, pensions, and health insurance, but would exclude adoption rights. Twice before, the Czech parliament has rejected similar proposals. The nation's Roman Catholic bishops and Catholic-affiliated National Center for the Family are actively lobbying against the current bill. The Czech national group Gay Initiative assisted in the development of the bill and fully supports it. Spokesperson Jiří Hromada called opposition to the bill hysterical envy.
A conservative Christian group in Canada has hand-delivered 5,000 anti-gay letters to residents of Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Recently, a report recommended addition of information about sexual orientation to the city's teacher training, school libraries, and school curricula. The group Christian Truth Activists said in its letter, "Now the homosexuals want to share their filth and propaganda with Saskatchewan's children."
In Egypt, the lone miner netted in the notorious May police raid on a gay-inclusive Cairo riverboat club this week was given the maximum sentence for debauchery, 3 years imprisonment in a youth facility, followed by 3 years of police supervision. Mahmoud Abdel Fattah confessed to having had sex with another male and to belonging to a gay organization, but that confession may have been extracted by torture. Because of his age, variously reported as 15 and 17 years, Abdel Fattah was tried in a different court from the other 52 men arrested, and so, unlike them, he has the option to appeal, although it's not yet known if he will. The mass trial of the other defendants continues.
Berlin's mayoral election campaign is the ugliest in years. Openly gay interim mayor Klaus Wowereit was described by his opponent, Frank Steffel, as having a deformed character. While Steffel has apparently not been any more explicit than that in attacking Wowereit's sexual orientation, Steffel has gone out of his way to display his wife as a reminder of his own heterosexuality. Ironically, Wowereit's Social Democratic Party, which holds a majority in the Berlin Assembly, for years formed a coalition with Steffel's Christian Democratic Party, but now each group blames the other for the city's financial problems.
And while U.S. Republicans may appear to be kinder to gays and lesbians this week, the same is not expected of Britain's opposition Conservative Party. The Tories elected Ian Duncan Smith as their national leader, and he promptly named a very conservative leadership team and fired gay supportive Stephen Norris from the party post he held for the national elections campaign. This largely dashed hopes raised by Smith's briefly questioning the party's hardline support for Section 28, the Thatcher-era prohibition against local governments devoting resources to promotion of homosexuality. The party's gay and lesbian group Torch, Tory Campaign for Homosexual Equality, welcomed Smith's election. But openly lesbian former Torch head Karen Gillard, a member of the Plymouth City Council, called Smith a bigot and defected to the gay-supportive Liberal Democrats, saying she had become embarrassed to be a conservative.
Openly lesbian author Ali Smith's novel Hotel World is one of six finalists for the UK's Booker Prize, one of the richest and most distinguished awards in world literature. Another of the finalists announced this week, Andrew Miller's Oxygen, features a gay character.
And finally, Norway's Verdensgang newspaper reports that women there are kissing other women in public as never before. A sociologist attributed what's been labeled a craze to a new openness among women for sexual experimentation. A nightclub owner agreed that it's totally part of the zeitgeist to show that you're open for new things, adding that it's been going on for years, so no one reacts anymore. A spokesperson for Norway's National Association for Lesbian and Gay Liberation praised the new freedom that allows public displays of same-gender affection, but noted there's a big difference between kissing a female friend and being a lesbian. If women are kissing other women due to social pressure or as part of a trend, she said, that's wrong.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 22, 2001. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Some 40 countries were represented by about 100 gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender activists who came to Oakland, California in late August for the 21st World Conference of the International Lesbian and Gay Association, or ILGA. At a small pre-conference before the main week-long gathering, about two dozen participants from Zimbabwe, the Philippines, Venezuela, and China, among others, met to discuss issues relevant to lesbi, gay, and trans people in the Southern Hemisphere. Reporters Mary Salome and Emily Charles spoke with some of them about ILGA, the South-South Dialogue, and the current situations in their home countries.
ILGA is the International Lesbian and Gay Association. It was founded in 1978. It's the only global federation of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender groups worldwide. So it's a very unique organization. It has very large member organizations within its federation, right down to very small ones in very developing countries or regions of the world.
ILGA is the largest international federation of more than 400 organizations and individuals. It was started in Europe and it was central in the US, and now it is more regionalized, and we in our regions tend to do our own networking, our own capacity building, and respond to the World Board.
According to ILGA literature, the South-South Dialogue was initiated by ILGA Co-Secretary General Phumzile Mtetwa. The initiative arose from discussions at the ILGA 19th World Conference in Johannesburg, and the first face-to-face meeting took place at the 20th ILGA World Conference in Rome, 2000. The objectives of the South-South Dialogue were formulated as follows: to ensure that Southern LGBT perspectives and issues are raised and remain on the global agenda, to identify key and strategic Southern LGBT activities, and ensure input and participation in the international processes, to identify key areas of collaboration in our activities in the pursuit of full legal and social equality for LGBT people, to highlight the role played by LGBT people in the broader human rights struggle, and to situate our struggle within the broader human rights struggle, and finally, to open a specific space within ILGA to develop a Southern agenda.
My name is Sherman DeRose, I'm from Sri Lanka, and I'm also the Asian representative to the International Lesbian and Gay Association, as well as the AIDS Working Party Coordinator for ILGA. I think this is certainly a very, very important step to build up networks and bridges with groups in the South. South, I don't know how it has been defined, but it is for people of color, people of lesser minority, and economically less advantaged people. And I think this is very significant, since it is very important for us to know our own needs and to see our own strategies, whether we really meet the needs of our communities, and also to see what we can learn from elsewhere. And I think this is why South and South is very, very vital to us.
My name is Sylvia Evans, and I work for the National Latino, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Organization in the United States in Puerto Rico. We are a huge community in the whole world, but I think the activists, we're just few. Everybody cares about the issues, but the ones who are hands-on the movement, we're just few.
Hey, my name is Keith Goddard, and I'm from the Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe. And I'm here for two reasons. It's the South-South Dialogue and also the Africa as a region. I was hoping that there would be more people from African LGBT organizations here, but the few of us here, well, it should be enough for us to start working towards a bigger network. From the South-South Dialogue thing, it's really just, as far as I'm concerned, just to explore what the possibilities are. And whether there is much sense in people in Africa making connections and working with people, say, in Asia or China, who have very, and especially the Spanish-speaking world, who have very different part of the world, very different cultures. And just because we all come from the South, as it's called, it doesn't mean that we're all the same. Of course, it's beneficial to us if countries from the South, like Malaysia and whatever, are attacking our government, and they are the ones to be seen trying to influence changes in Africa. When it's an American organization or a European organization, it's just seen as foreign interference by those people from the North. So in that way, a South-South dialogue should help us. It's strange that we all have to meet in a place like Oakland. Yeah, it's. I mean, we now have this thing called the Africa Exchange, which, and we had about six or seven organizations from East Africa and Southern Africa, which met last year in Harare, and we're going to meet again in Namibia. But it does seem ironic that, you know, the only time that Africans get together is when we're hauled off the continent and shoved in some foreign hotel somewhere.
I'm Oscar Tadero. I'm president of Progressive Organization of Gays in the Philippines, ProGay, a left-wing militant group for transgendered and gay men across the country of my Philippines. I'm here in Oakland to attend the Global Gay Summit and to push for a more palpable Asian presence here. From the South-South Dialogue, we want to make people of color and people from the southern countries get more accustomed and familiarizing, being pushy. For myself, I would really want to make the Asian queer presence felt not only here, because here in the United States, in North America, it's there is a great Asian presence, but mostly in the academic sense. We would like that translated into a mass movement inside Asia.
I came from China. So I present a group called the Beijing Sisters, based in Beijing, China. It's mostly to exchange experiences and learn from each other, especially from southern countries. I think it's especially about how to manage the globalization, because it's with our detective regime, there's nothing too much we can do. But with globalization, we hope that we can cooperate and learn from the others to manage better.
I am Jose Morantes. I am the GLBT representative of the Venezuelan section of Amnesty International. I am also the media and political coordinator of an NGO focused specifically in human rights of GLBT people in Venezuela. It's the only one. We deal with not only with sexual orientation, but with sexual orientation discrimination related to gender issues. Relations with the other NGOs from Latin America, mainly to strengthen our abilities, our skills,
in order to, you know, to make force in front of our governments and to build common space for us.
You're listening to coverage of the 21st Annual World Conference of ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, on This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
I'm Analia Sarabia. I'm president of CLIC, Can't Live in the Closet, which is a Manila-based lesbian group in the Philippines. I'm as well the, at the moment, representative for Asia Women of ILGA. CLIC does work with women, and many of these women don't like to consider themselves lesbian or even bisexual, so we just say, okay, non-heterosexual. Our problem is that we don't have enough role models, and people are not even sure what they are, so much less know how to label themselves. After I organized the ILGA Asia Lesbian Caucus, which was at the end of July, I had a series of meetings with cabinet ministers in my country. These are agencies and institutions that can, if they show sympathy and cooperation, they can make the lives of lesbians and gays in the Philippines less stressful, let's say. If we can dialogue with government officials, I mean, using my position, for instance, as ILGA, then why not, no? It seems like when you say you belong to an organization that has 400, 500, 600 members the world over, and we are representing this number of countries, then people say, ah, you mean there's such a thing? Yeah, there is, you know? And they start to think, oh, well, this must be serious.
For us in Venezuela is has the same force, the same strength in international law than the constitutional law. So that's very important for us, because any advancement in the international field is legal in Venezuela for us.
Our president, President Mugabe, is probably the world's number one best-known homophobe. He was the one who in 1995 referred to us as being worse than dogs and pigs. And for the about 5 years, he was very vocally homophobic, both inside Zimbabwe and outside Zimbabwe. But Zimbabwe itself is now in a state of crisis, and in fact, the heat is off the lesbian and gay community specifically. He's not mentioned very much about homosexuality in the last couple of years. We now find ourselves part of a much broader debate. The gay and lesbian group GALS actually stood up and challenged the government in 95, and we were criticized for doing so. Now people are realizing that we were actually right. All the organizations that we're in contact with are all on the net, and we even now have a listserv so that we can get stuff out to people very quickly. But I mean, what she says about it only being part of a tiny minority that has access to it, that is a big problem, yeah. But I think we've got to start somewhere, and if there's one workstation which is linked to the net, and then the people who have access to that station are working with people in rural areas or whatever, at least there's some kind of link between what is happening outside the urban areas and the rest of the continent.
So the internet has become more of a tool for you organizing in China?
Yes, it becomes more of a tool, but also it brings a lot of limitation as well, because not many people have access to internet in China.
So it's a class issue?
Yes, it's a class issue, which is a very new issue for China as a communism country.
I've been lucky to be in two gay prides already in Puerto Rico, and it did amaze me the way they work hard. The union of the LGBTs, it did amaze me. It was the way that women and men work together. That's the beauty of that specific country, Puerto Rico.
To be gay is a criminal offense in Sri Lanka, India, Pakistan, Nepal, and so on and so forth. And it certainly need to recognize that we are not criminals in our own land, that we are people and we are not asking for any special rights, but a right to survive. So this is what the basic issue that we are dealing with in Sri Lanka and in South Asia in particular.
Australia is fairly well off when it comes to GLBT rights and issues. They have national equal opportunity legislation. but their anti-discrimination legislation doesn't cover sexuality. That's a goal that we've been striving for quite a while. All the states now have decriminalized homosexuality. They have equal opportunity in anti-discrimination legislation, although New South Wales now remains the only one that does not cover bisexual people. Transgender people are still not covered in Queensland. We're also very concerned about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander reconciliation, our Indigenous people, and they have Black, White and Pink, which is a group within the queer community moving towards reconciliation, but it's a growing campaign right throughout Australia.
When queer groups started talking about sexuality 7 years ago, the fundamentalists fired their opening salvo that this gay agenda thing is imported from the West. And so we tell them that it's a reality that among gay people, queers in the Philippines, that the priority issues are jobs, education, healthcare, and sexuality really comes last. But with pro-gay, we share your concerns. We want a better country. We want food on the table, education for everyone, and you should realize that queer people are also deprived of the economic benefits. We suffer the same poverty.
I'd like to make an appeal to Asian Americans, Filipino Americans, to please try and come to the conference in Manila in November. This is the first time ILGA will have a world conference in Asia. It's very significant, not just for the Philippines, but for many lesbian and gay people in Asia who think they are living in isolation, but they are not. And people from the countries that are very dangerous to organize in, like Singapore, Pakistan, Bangladesh, other countries, please come or get in touch with gay and lesbian people from your countries so that they can come to Manila. It's not all going to be called ILGA, because we know how dangerous it is for them to come to a lesbian and gay conference. It's going to be a human rights and sexuality conference, and we're going to be tackling religion, culture, and tradition, and how all of these things discriminate against all of us. Please try to participate. Please try to come.
That was Manila activist Analia Zarabia, and coverage of the ILGA Conference South-South Dialogue was prepared by Mary Salome and Emily Charles of Queer in Your Ear Productions in San Francisco. For more information about the International Lesbian and Gay Association and their upcoming events, including the 2003 World Conference in the Philippines, check their website at www.ilga.org. That's www.ilga.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, and Mary Salome and Emily Charles contributed program material. Thanks also to Arwin Moore. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an important message about This Way Out's tenuous financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KMUD Garberville, California, WJSC Johnson, Vermont, CJSR Edmonton, Alberta, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this local community radio station. Do stay tuned.